Hey there, everybody. It's the Film Pigs Podcast. We're a podcast all about the movies. Totally original, never been done before. We're the only one that's ever thought of doing this. Not only the first one that's thought about just kind of recording some kind of audio discussion and then putting it on the internet for other people to listen to, but also one about the movies. I don't know of any others. Do you guys?
No, this is the only podcast, period.
Also, yeah, in fact, I think that's a really good name for what we're doing. Like, I think we coined a new phrase or a new genre. Fantastic. So I'm your podcast host, Steve Skelton. I am here with fellow film pigs, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Steve Skelton, podcast host.
And Stephen Falk.
It's a me, Chris Pratt.
Oh boy.
That's Chris Pratt. Skelton, you didn't tell me we had Chris Pratt.
Yeah, it's an uncanny. It's an uncanny.
You guys, meet my brother, Luigi.
Oh my God.
Chris Pine. I don't remember who's playing Luigi.
I can't wait to see that movie.
Yeah, me too. It looks great.
It's such a good idea. Now, is it going to be original, or are they going to be doing just kind of a shot-for-shot remake of the original Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo?
Yeah. They're just doing that. Leguizamo obviously had to cast in on the way on the casting controversy, but
wait, he did? What did he say?
I don't know. I didn't read what Leguizamo had to say. My Leguizamo weekly subscription died, and his Substack is too expensive. So I don't know.
I thought maybe you knew exactly what the
No. Again, it's all paid contents behind a firewall. Leguizamo firewall.
You just got the headline. Okay.
I just got the headline that he wasn't happy.
That's fair enough.
And it's like, you know, dude, it's been enough time. I think maybe you should let Super Mario Brothers go.
Yeah, there's a lot more for Leguizamo to be mad about, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least you got to work with Bob Hoskins. He's awesome.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah.
Anyway, folks, with this podcast, we're trying something a little different because I don't know about you guys, but this pandemic has made me very, very tired.
It's a real drag. It's a drag.
It's awful. And I'm lucky, you know, I mean, I have a job. I mean, for half this pandemic, now I've had a job. The first half, I didn't. You know, I've got an actual job, so I'm paying my rent and my bills, so I'm okay there, which is, you know, something to be thankful for. But there's also this kind of relentless dragging on and on of this whole situation unnecessarily.
Well, yeah, we can't really, like, going out is a thing, you know. You have to talk to people about testings and maskings and we don't need to be doing this. And that's the most aggravating part.
So the bottom line basically is it's when we do a regular podcast, it, you know, whoever's hosting has, you know, a good chunk of work to do, prep work to do, preparing discussion and games and other stuff, and the other pigs, you know, also have to prepare.
It's a full time job. It's a full time job.
It is. There's some homework involved, and it's, you know, it can, you know, if you know you're working a lot and you're in this pandemic that's been dragging on, and then also like Todd and Falk, you know, you also both of you kind of have the added challenge if you also have kids that you also have to
I should be looking
over
my kids, hold on.
Oh yeah So, you know, I can only imagine, you know. he's actually getting the monitor. Look at
it was on. I could have heard him. Probably.
But I can only imagine kind of that additional level of stress and difficulty.
Well, because your kids don't talk to you anymore, right, Skelton?
Right. Yeah. No, they cut me out completely. yeah. It's been years.
And they're what? They're twin 8-year-old boys.
Yeah.
So sad they cut you off.
And their little sister. You always forget their little sister.
Well, right. No, they. Right. I've never. Right. Yeah.
Elsa.
Yeah. So yeah, it's
She's darling though. I saw her. Me and your ex went. And we hung out with the kids, and it was great. They're doing good, Skelton.
Oh,
they're
good. Great. That's nice.
I follow her. I follow your daughter on the gram. She's quite the influencer.
4-year-old influencer. Who's that? Which son has the eye thing?
That's Cameron.
Yeah, he's not doing so well.
Yeah, but that's a. That's like a family thing, but it skips a generation, so I didn't get it.
How often do you have to explain to people that you named your son Cameron after Kirk Cameron and not James Cameron?
It comes up a lot.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. That's something that is an endless question, and it enrages me every time I have to explain myself.
Of course. That's gotta be aggravating.
So...
Try naming your kid Colby and explaining to people, no, not after the basketball player. It's like the cheese.
So we're going to try something a little different with this podcast. Trying to still kind of do some things that are fun and interesting. But, you know, we didn't want to just do like a one-off bacon type episode where we just kind of ramble like we've been doing for the last 7 minutes. Already. So we wanted to maintain a little bit of structure, but also to kind of lighten the load, make it a little easier to prep and get in. So we're going to do something that's got a few segments in it, and let's see how it goes. And if we like it, maybe we'll do it again. If
is
it's
this
a disaster,
a,
maybe
this,
we won't.
Is this a backdoor pilot? Is that what this
it's
is?
It's kind of a backdoor pilot for basically making it easier for us to do podcasts in the pandemic when we're very, very tired. So let's jump into it, and we're going to start off with a segment that's called What Have You Seen Lately?
Oh, I remember this. We used to do this in cars. Oh, I like that. It's groovy. Wow.
Right. So this is What Have You Seen Lately? Yeah, it's kind of a riff on what we've done before. Basically, we just kind of want to talk a little bit about what we've seen lately. What movies have we seen on the Netflix or on the Amazon Prime or on the HBO Max, or if we went into a theater and braved it recently to see something or other. Just kind of take the pulse of what we've been watching lately. Todd, what have you seen lately?
Oh my God, so many things. I don't know where to start. I'm not even going to touch the like low-budge B-movie stuff I've seen on streaming. Stuff in theaters that I've seen, and ooh, not necessarily in the theater, but it's available in multiple platforms.
Right.
Starting with, I saw the new Jordan Peele-produced Candyman.
Ooh.
A sequel. It's a sequel. It's a direct sequel to the original.
Yeah, I read it. Well, yeah, it wasn't like a remake or a reboot, but it was an actual sequel, which I thought was kind of cool.
Right. Did you see it 5 times in a row?
No, why would I do that, Steve? Why would I do that?
Well, then someone could say, what have you seen? And you would say...
Why would I want... Stop it. Stop it.
Don't say it.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Sorry.
You're acting like a white person. Which is
I'm sorry.
What
the worst thing to be. I know. Sorry.
That's what I loved about this movie. This movie for me personally was not, you know, it wasn't the best, but it was fine. But what I liked about it is every time it was starting to get a little bit slow and they needed some idiot to say Candyman in the mirror 5 times. They'd suddenly, in a meta way, someone would go, well, who would be stupid enough to do that? And they'll cut to some random white person doing it. So that element of the movie I really liked. It was really cool to see at least the visage of Tony Todd a couple of times.
Oh,
but Tony Todd, it was
Friend of the pigs. Friend of the pigs.
Yeah, yes. Friend of the pigs. It needed, I mean, the guy who plays the new Candyman. And if you see the movie, you kind of understand why there's a new guy and it folds in Tony Todd and all that stuff. But, you know, and the new guy's really good, but he's not Tony Todd. He just wasn't. It's hard to... Tony Todd worked in that role in a kind of perfect, weird way.
Yeah, that's a really movie, hard... So. That's a really hard performance to follow. Because that's like a iconic, pitch-perfect horror...
Yeah.
...character. Like,
yeah, and he's got a regal quality to him.
Yeah.
Which the new Candyman is more like just creepy homeless guy who came out of a wall at you. It's just different. But it was okay, I would say. But not great. But here's what I actually... Okay, so I saw that in the theater. I saw it in the theater. I went to see it.
Okay, yeah. But we're going to do one movie at a time. We'll go around.
All right, cool. Well, I don't know what else to say about Candyman.
Okay, but you liked it. You liked it.
I liked it. It's okay. It's the best Candyman sequel to date, for sure. For sure.
Okay.
That's Steve saying Falk. Not a lot.
Yeah, but Steve Falk, what have you seen lately?
Well, I have not been to the movies in a movie theater in a while. I mean, I saw Clueless at Cinespia, which is outside. That was fun. But the last movies I've seen, it's been a weird hodgepodge of movies. I saw Vacation Friends.
Oh, I saw that.
Whoa.
Yeah, John Cena. I forgot to write down a couple movies I saw this month, or I've just been so busy, which is true. I haven't seen any movies. I saw The Lady Eat. Oh, no, that was Vacation Friends. That's it. Vacation Friends was John Cena and Lil Reg Howery. I think that's his name, right? Something like that.
Who?
Lil Rel?
I don't know what the guy's name is.
You don't remember his name?
I can look it up.
Lil Rel Howery.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and then a couple of lovely ladies, and it was for, you know, for straight to video dumb or straight to Hulu dumb movies. It was kind of fun. John Cena's kind of fun. What'd you think?
I agree with you.
Yeah, no, he is, and he's I liked him in that Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Gonna see if that spinoff is any good, but he does good like silly stuff. He's got a good sense of kind of like how to push his physicality in a funny comedic fashion.
But yeah. he also what I like about him is he leans towards R-rated fare. So he wants to make the inappropriate comedies. And right. Not a lot of people are willing to throw their star power behind.
Or wrestlers. Not a lot of wrestlers.
They usually go with Tooth Fairy shit or nanny shit. But
well,
John
he
Cena's
certainly
like,
does too. But like I'm a fireman, right? Didn't he do that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. Uh-oh. He did. Well, it's okay if you do a kid comedy, but you're also doing the R-rated comedy. For me, that's cool. But, you know, the other guys aren't doing that. John Cena.
Yeah, no, he's not like he'll do more risky comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes him fun.
I like John Cena for R-rated comedy wrestler movies, and I like Kane for R-rated slasher films.
Oh, for slashers. Yeah.
That's what I like. Those are my takes on wrestlers.
Good. Excellent. Excellent take, Todd. I saw that, I think it's Netflix movie, the Kate, Mary Elizabeth Winstead action lady who is, it's kind of I enjoyed it. It's, script-wise, there's no real big surprises. It kind of mashes up kind of the familiar action-y stuff with, it's got some, you know, John Wick DNA, because I think, I can't remember who, I think one of the Wick producers is also one of the producers on Kate.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of mashes up a little John Wickness plus the action trope of, you know, I have 24 hours to live and I'm going to get my revenge before this 24 hours is up kind of set up. But that being said, Winstead is kind of taking the action-y persona that she was kind of playing for a little bit more comedic effect in Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm.
And is doing it more straight.
Wasn't she in the remake of The Thing or the prequel to The Thing or whatever?
I can't remember.
Isn't that her?
I can't remember.
In that movie? I feel like it is. I feel like she's been working towards being an action hero for a while.
Yeah, no, and she's doing the kind of the anti-hero straight ahead thing in Kate, and she's good. I liked her a lot.
I like her too.
I liked her performance quite a bit. And you know, it's a, you know, even though it's kind of a pretty, you know, pretty predictable plot, it's still, I'm a sucker for like the hero or anti-hero who's just constantly getting the hell kicked out of them through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's Kate delivers that.
Why isn't there a movie? Why isn't there a lady action movie called Anti-Hero?
Oh God, that's so good. That's so good.
Why are you saying that right now on a podcast? We can't put that out.
Why don't I just go write that and sell it for $1 million?
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
All right, I'm going to do it. Guys, yeah. if you're listening to this, you look on Hollywood Reporter in about a year, you'll see Stephen Falk sells a giant spec script, Anti-Hero.
Yeah, to Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, the Peacock.
I would watch the fuck out of that.
But Kate also has some good action too. I mean, the fight sequences are actually pretty nicely done, and I enjoyed them.
Who's Anti-Hero though? Before we move on, who is Anti-Hero?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah.
Oh, Charlize Theron. Dreamcasting. Charlize Theron doesn't get married, doesn't want to have kids. Her little sister has a kid, and she has to travel back to meet her niece. And she's beset upon by all the bad guys she's wronged in the past, and
right, who of course kidnapped the niece.
Yeah, and she has to fight her. Well, that's in the third act. First, she has to fight her way to get back to Ohio, and unwittingly in the third act brings an entire squadron of Eastern European bad guys to Shaker Heights. Where then you learn her father and younger sister and mother are all John Wick badasses who were in witness relocation. And that's why they grew up in Shaker Heights. They're actually a fucking Russian mob family from the Bronx. And they just whip the shit out of everybody. And then they have a fun christening.
I just love the idea that, no, the kidnapping's in the third act because she has to fight her way to Ohio.
Of course. That's
you have to start that one.
Listen, I'm a professional screenwriter.
Yeah, no, you got to listen to the professionals.
No,
here.
I'm saying it was great.
I just made up the tagline too. You ready to up the ante? Or probably, sorry, it's time to up the ante. There you go.
$1 million. Yeah, and then the sequel tagline is just Annie up.
Oh, Annie, yeah. It writes itself, you guys.
Yeah, no, it's practically, yeah. It's, I mean, good it's stuff. Just, it, this is a moneymaker. This is a full franchise.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Todd, what else have you seen lately?
Well, I'll just piggyback on the lady action thing and go with The Protégé.
That's the next one on my list too.
With the Maggie Q,
and the Keaton,
and the Michael Keaton.
How was that?
It was fine. I mean, it
that one's weirder. That one's like it for me. That one hit a little weirder. I still enjoyed it, but it's a little weirder than Kate.
Yeah. It's not as straightforward as Kate. It's not as well-paced as Kate. And it's not as badass. Like, you want Maggie Q to be, I don't know, it's weird. You wanted her to be a little bit more badass than she was, as badass as she was. But I guess it was rather glossy and not gritty enough in a certain way. But seeing old-ass Michael Keaton fighting Maggie Q is... undeniably fun. I had a lot of fun, especially with the action in this movie. I thought it was well put together.
Yeah, no, yeah, again, like both this and Kate, I enjoyed the action in it. I think Protégé also was a little bit more doing something interesting, which was, actually now I'm conflating both of these movies because I'm not sure stylistically which one I'm thinking of now. One of them was one of them was doing kind of a green grassy kind of handheld, but doing a really nice job following the action in the action sequences, unlike green grass in the Bourne movies. So I can't remember if it was Kate or the Protégé, but it's because I liked the hand to hand in both the movies. I thought it was, the choreography was actually pretty fun and exciting.
And captured well, because you can say that it is a testament that it was captured well, unlike a Bourne sequel.
Yeah, no, I think like the thing like Maggie Q didn't seem as badass to you is because the script was a little weird. Like the dialogue would just spiral out into places that almost felt like it was going almost a little parody of action movie.
Yeah, it was weird. It wasn't committed.
Like I didn't hate it. Yeah. I didn't hate it, but I thought it was weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
it's just a stylistic choice that wasn't quite landing 100% with me.
If you're an action junkie, The Protégé is fine. If you're not, if it's not your genre, if it's not a genre you need to like ingest all the time, then you're going to be bored, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Falk, have you seen anything else lately?
Yeah, what are we doing? Three each?
Sure. I'm just doing a round robin. I only had a couple, so.
Oh boy. Okay. Let's see. No, that sucked. I'm gonna say I saw Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain, which was the documentary about Anthony Bourdain, and it was quite compelling. It's not perfect by any means, and it. It doesn't delve into certain things it should, like I think his death. There's a lot of weird questions, and they sort of they brought up the questions and then sort of left it there. Mm. With Aja Argento that whole Michigas. So that was a little weird, but it was really affecting seeing him. Seeing his life and rise and told with his voice. I know there was some controversy about using AI to replicate his voice for some, you know, some using words he had written but never read or recorded. It was a really moving portrait and makes you me miss the guy and honestly kind of it highlights without hitting over the head the fine line between sort of sanity and success and despair that we're all walking at all times. It's that aspect of it, I think, is pretty haunting. That someone who seems to have it all and a loving daughter and a mad career and everything could just sort of and so much insight into his own brain and someone who's so self-evolved and actualized and introspective could succumb to a really bad night, or the demons that have been always following him is pretty sad. Hmm. It was really good. Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, I already talked about The Protégé because Todd talked about it, so that's kind of mine. Todd, do you want to close out? Do you got one movie left?
Oh my God, I saw so many movies, but I guess
just
I'll
pick one. Just one.
I'll pick one that I went to the theater to see.
Ooh, okay, so this is a big risk, so yeah, must have been a really good movie that was totally worth it.
Worth getting COVID.
This is what we're doing. Before Candyman, I saw Candyman in the theater and this next movie in the theater. Before that, I had seen Stillwater, and that was like a month and a half ago.
Risked COVID for Stillwater?
Well, I wasn't. At the time, I wasn't really. I was going to a matinee. I just was happy to be back in the theaters. And then I saw this movie and I hated it so much. And I was like, I risked my life for that. So I got to be more picky about it. And so Candyman was like, this is a matinee. I go to matinees where the audience is minimal.
Yeah.
And that's. Candyman was not worth that risk, if that makes sense. Candyman is worth watching, but it's not worth any kind of serious risk. Cop Shop, however, which is the movie I went to see in the theater, I'd say is worth a matinee risk. I wouldn't risk it, you know, at night, like going to a packed theater. I wouldn't do it, but you're not going to need to because I don't know how long it's going to be in the theaters. But I really enjoyed it. This is a Joe Carnahan movie, 100% Joe Carnahan movie. You know, but the performances, like the top four leads, are kind of amazing. It takes a minute to get going, but the acting from the top on down is great, and the characters are fun and well drawn. So you can kind of enjoy hanging out in this weird police station in the middle of nowhere. And some of the cops are slobs, and some of them are cool and badasses. And it's got a lot of twists, and the action's really good. It's basically I would call it Joe Carnahan's take on Assault on Precinct 13.
Wow.
I'm just looking up the movie right now because I always forget the lead actor's name who I like so much.
I think the best thing you can do on a podcast is pause to look something up.
I'm so sorry. I just want to Alexis Lauder. Okay, so here's the cast.
Well, you were too quiet. You were too quiet.
Oh, sorry. So the name is Alexis Lauder.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. and your two, you know, movie stars as such who, you know, buoyed this thing are Gerard Butler and Frank Grillo, who I don't
think... An extra legal amount of stubble to have in one movie, isn't it?
It's a lot of stubble. It's a lot of stubble. And Frank Grillo in this particular movie also has a man bun, which makes it even...
Get out!
He has a man bun. But Alexis Lauder, who I'd never heard of before, I assume she's like a TV person or something. I don't know where Joe Carnahan got her. She is fucking great. She's really great, and she should be an action movie star.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. She's fucking killer in this movie. She anchors this movie. She is the protagonist in this movie. Grillo and Gerard Butler are both so like vague on purpose. Vague. You don't know what they're up to. That's the whole bit. Those are the twists. What are these two assholes up to? And they converge in this police station and get themselves arrested and start this giant fight within the police station. So you don't know who they're connected to. You don't know what they're up to. Alexis Lauder's very simple. She's a cop, you know, and she's doing her job. And then also another simple character who comes in and it just steals this movie on a lot of levels is Toby Huss shows up.
Ooh.
And
he's
an assassin. And if you know Toby and you like Toby, the actor, this is one of his best performances. Like, he was a lot of fun, I thought, in the first Halloween movie that came out a couple years ago. It's not the first Halloween movie. But now there's Halloween Kills coming out.
Right.
So the first one of this new trilogy, he's in that. I thought he stole that show. He's having so much fun in this movie as a psychotic hitman. I can't kind of recommend it enough. Just for him and Alexis Lauder. Like, their performances alone...
Toby Huss is great and very funny and a nice guy.
Yeah. So, yeah. If you like action movies.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
You need to see this. You do need to see this.
Carnahan's like B-movie shit is right up my alley. So I'll go see it.
Carnahan's always solid. Yeah.
And what I want to know, too, and see is there's like, because Grillo and Carnahan apparently had a major problem with Gerard Butler on this movie. There was a lot of friction. And Gerard Butler, I guess, like this is, I'm piecing this together from rumors. So, you know, don't quote me, but this is my understanding is that Gerard Butler sort of went over their heads with executives and cut the movie in a certain way that he wanted it cut.
Ugh.
And Grillo's not happy about it, and Carnahan's not happy about it. And apparently when Carnahan put out like a, you know, an opening day, was like, I just want to thank everybody involved. He literally named everybody involved except Gerard Butler.
Oh, boy.
So I'm really curious about the behind the scenes, but regardless, think about it as like a payback. I don't know if you ever saw the director's cut of Payback. Mel Gibson made that movie a lot better. So maybe Gerard Butler saved Cop Shop, or maybe it's even more awesome if you see the other cut. I don't know. I want to.
Oh. All right.
I hope we get the chance.
Maybe one day.
All right. All right. That's awesome, guys. That's a What Have You Seen Lately? I think that was a huge success. No notes. I think let's move things on to a bit of a discussion, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Take a black one to move me. Get me the hell away from this TV. Yeah, that means it's time for a discussion. We're going to have a little talk here about a subject. and I don't have a big, huge preamble. I have a kind of a short little statement/question to generate some discussion, debate, thought, whatever. I call it the pig question.
Oh, the pig, like not big, but
yeah,
pig.
Yeah, it's like it's a really obvious pun.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, here it is.
I don't think that one worked for me.
So look, we're just workshopping.
The pig picture.
The pig picture. That's I can work with that.
Okay.
It's the pig picture.
Okay.
All right. So here it is. Are we ready?
What about the pig cock?
Right? Okay. Now. No, I get it. And it doesn't work on multiple levels.
Ah. All right. Whatever you want.
All right, so here we go, the pig picture. Now that streaming services have become the norm, with an increasing amount of content being produced to feed subscription models, where do you see the industry trending in the next 10 years, both in the audience-facing streaming versus theaters balance and in how the industry itself will change how content is created, specifically considering things like the Writers Guild successfully killing packaging and IATSE currently on the verge of a strike for better working conditions? The pig picture.
Labor. Go labor.
Go labor. I agree.
I will say one thing. Regardless of the exact number of theaters that close, or the ubiquity of the pulls of movie budget, meaning indies or tent poles and nothing else showing up in the theaters. Regardless of that pace or actual equation, a nice thing will be not only the more robust nature of production with the streaming wars continuing for quite a while probably, but the fact that middle ground movies finally now have a place. Mm-hmm. There's a place for the $30 million movie. There's a place for the $50 million movie. And in if streaming hadn't come along, those tilts to the pole, to the poles would have continued anyway, maybe slower, and the mid-range movie would have been except for, you know, certain star-driven things or auteur-driven things would have been completely disappeared into the past. And and so I think it's a really, I think that aspect of it, it bodes well.
And I'm wondering also if, like, you know, in the long run, that maybe in some cases is going to be able to drive some of those more mid-budget pictures back into theaters as well for maybe limited releases.
Yeah, it definitely will. I mean, I think filmmakers will continue to always want the theatrical, and it'll be much like a billboard in LA. It'll be a vanity nod to the director. It'll be like, Yeah, sure. We'll give you 2 weeks in the theater. We'll open in 150 theaters in college towns and the big cities, and then we'll go straight to streaming. So yeah, you'll make a tiny bit of box office, and then it'll go to the streamer. But you know, in a way, that might look worse. Like Dear Evan Hansen, which is a wildly successful musical that they maybe made 7 years too late. If you look at 27-year-old Ben Platt, what he looks like now playing a high school kid. that movie arguably should have gone to streamers because it's going to look like a flop after this past weekend, right? It opened to, what, less than $7 million or something because they went theatrical with it. They overestimated its appeal, and they underestimated the Uncanny Valley problem of Ben Platt on the big screen, you know, playing Steve Buscemi going, "Hello, fellow youths." I mean, it's really fucked up. It's really fucked up. But anyway, and if it had just gone to streaming, it might, you know, it might have been fine. It might have seemed like they might have had good numbers or whatever their internal numbers that are a lie anyway. And it wouldn't have had this glaring sort of stench of failure that it does now.
I always thought that if they'd released The Other Sister direct to VHS, it would have been a better situation for everybody. It's the
exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I agree with your assessment entirely. I was trying to wrap my mind around this and, you know, and thinking about it, like, just from my own perspective, I like, what makes me go to a movie now? I mean, I feel like I know people don't want to bring the pandemic into it, but I think the pandemic is shifted things and changed things so much, and we don't even know how much now. And I think from my own personal subjective place, anecdotally, like, what is it? Like, what is it like that got me out to see Cop Shop? And is that an actual giant audience that movie makers need to think about? And I think that what you're saying, Steve, with this other movie is that it's a new thing, figuring out what gets people out to movies. It's not what it used to be. It's not just the tentpole. It's not just the Marvel movie. You know what I mean? There's new audiences to consider, and or maybe they're not new, they're old audiences, but they need to be considered, like what gets them into the theaters. Because, you know, I for me personally, it's not that I don't want to see, you know, Black Widow or this new Marvel one that's, what's it called?
Shang-Chi?
Yeah, Shang-Chi. Like, it's not that I don't want to see them. It's that I don't want to spend the money, time, along with the risk to see them, you know? Certainly, yeah. You know, maybe if my son was so compelled to see them, then I would go to enjoy his experience of it. But I don't need it, you know?
Well, that's also the flip side, you know, of that. Since Disney Plus has launched, I'm curious as to, you know, once we kind of get into a post-pandemic, you know, period, probably, what, a year from now? And kind of it's, you know, the concern about going to a physical movie space isn't as great. If kind of with the release windows that we're looking at, which is right now, I think, you know, with Disney, I think they're doing like 45 days, something like that.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range. That's like kind of like a, well, you know, do I want to go spend all that money and go sit in the theater and do that experience? Or do I just want to let my Disney Plus subscription run its course and I'll check it out in a month and a half and move on with my life? And because there's so many Marvel movies that are going to be coming out, it's like, well, you know, there's going to be one every month anyway. So I'm wondering, you know, what what the streaming side of it is going to do to their theater going experience, because, you know, prior to Disney Plus launching, they were, whether you liked them or not, they were events. They were big movie events that drew big audiences because that was the only place to see them. But now, like, well, you know, these last couple of ones are, you know, or you can get on the streaming, or the Shang-Chi is going to be, I think, early November or something is when it becomes available on Disney Plus. Black Widow, they did that kind of test of, like, you have to have the subscription and give us $30 to see Black Widow. I guess it was day and date or something like that. And that seemed to actually go pretty well for them financially. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but it wasn't like
except
a failure.
For the lawsuit.
Yeah, the lawsuit.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that was their misstep. That was the
ScarJo. It's always your misstep.
Yeah, but just in terms of the getting people to who are already paying a subscription to also pony up another $30, you know, for an immediate hit of a new Marvel movie, it seemed to work pretty well for them. So I'm wondering if in some cases they're also going to be cannibalizing their own theatrical popularity and their own theatrical numbers.
Seems possible
as it becomes this new norm.
I mean, I hope it does make theater owners and movie producers on all levels think more about specific audiences when they're releasing things in theaters, like what will get people out. Because it doesn't seem, I mean, I know, like, you know, the new Marvel movie is number one and it was huge, but it doesn't seem that simple anymore, because even if it's number one at the box office, it's broken records. None of these movies are doing as well as they were before the pandemic, like out of the gate. You know what I mean? So if that continues, if we get out of this pandemic, we'll see what happens. But it's going to be at least another year before that happens. So it feels like, you know, the marketing teams need to figure out which movies will draw the right specific audiences out to theaters enough to make that profit. And it's not as easy as like a generalized, we'll get all the families to come, because they're not going to all come anymore. Because they're afraid, rightly so.
It sounded like I thought you said the marketing teens, like teenagers.
No, the teenagers.
It's just funny thinking of a group of, like, you know, sullen 15-year-olds sitting around a giant conference in ill-fitting suits.
Yeah, but like adult-sized suits.
Yeah, adult-sized suits. The marketing teens.
I'll watch that show as well. But you know what I mean. I didn't mean teens.
Yeah, no, I do.
Now let's talk a little bit kind of about the other side of it too. Because, you know, the streaming services now, it seems like that there's a much larger demand for content to fill streaming services, which is more than you would do in theaters. So, you know, we're in the industry is in this situation where it's having to churn out product beyond its apparent capacity to do so, based on the amount of hours that you know, crews are having to work to simply, you know, meet the existing demand of content. So, you know, what's going to happen on that side? Because it's not, well, you know, the industry isn't tenable.
It's funny. Steve said after we saw, this is a long time ago, after we saw the remake of Poseidon, called Poseidon, at the Man Chinese, it was such a bomb and it was such a bad movie. And Steve said, and I think it cost like $200 million or whatever it was at the time, some crazy amount of money. And he's like, imagine if you had just taken all the $200 million they spent on this Poseidon movie and you just made $200 million movies. So it seems like that's the kind of experiment that streaming services are up against. And it makes more sense because they need more content. It makes more sense for them to make $200 million movies than one $200 million movie. So maybe we're going to, it's being, for the market is forcing that to happen. I don't know. But I think it would be good.
I mean, I'm a split household. We're an IOTC and evil producer, director, showrunner household. And I don't know if there are any statistics. If Christina was here, she could speak better to it. But she's still on set at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there is a correlation between the crew hours and the uptick in production that has mm-hmm. happened after COVID and with streaming. I do not know if there's any correlation there, but I do think that it seems very specific that IOTC has had the ability to organize there right now. It's like it's 13 different shops, right? Something like that, just to start, where they've never been able to. So they have no. So they're taking all these pretty unpowerful shops and combining them to a very ubiquitous and all covering big shop. And that therein lies the power. So I do think that, you know, it's happening at a time when the power of production is going to tech companies, right? So it's yeah. It's not like the typical AMPTP producers. It's whether it's there is any substantive change or not in what it means. The bosses are the optics that the bosses are outside Hollywood tech companies, right? Toilet paper distributor, a computer manufacturer, whatever Hulu is,
and Shinehart Wig Company.
Shinehart Wig Company. I think that has really made a big difference into rallying the labor members. And
well, yeah, because traditionally you go to tech companies, you don't see a lot of unions in tech companies.
You sure don't.
So yeah, so it seems, yeah. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that's definitely a factor, and especially as you're saying, is you know the IOTC shops organizing.
You know, it's really funny, like. When it comes to big tech and money, I mean, it happens with smaller corporations anyway, but in general, I'm finding it very funny. I've been working on a show for an unnamed computer manufacturer who recently got into streaming and claims to have less than 20 million viewers when they're crying poor to IOTC. They also make phones and pads. But I'm working on a show for them.
I don't know what you mean.
It's Peacock, you guys.
oh yeah, I got the new Peacock pad. That thing's fucking killer.
Yeah, the Peacock pad. The show we're working on is inherently pretty expensive. What you need to do to make these visual effects and these things that are in the show work takes money. The budget we've been given is not accurate. It's not just like, oh, this is a low budget. We're going to have to cut some corners. We can't do the things that make the show, right? But so you have these fundamental questions. So then you get told, well, but that's the budget. And then, I guess I'm just dumb, but I get back to this question. Well, what if the budget's wrong? Like, can't you just change the budget? You know what I mean? Yeah. When you're looking at a company what's the valuation of Apple? $1 trillion, right? Didn't it hit a trillion?
If not, it's up there. So it's a ridiculous amount of money.
I know budgets are siloed and different divisions, you know, operate. They have their own.
So you're not working on Foundation.
I'm not working on Foundation, and it's funny because I watched the trailer for Foundation while I'm struggling to cut, you know, VFX shots of a squirrel. I'm like, okay, but that whole thing's in space. Like, can't we just have more money? anyway, I don't really have a point other than tech companies crying, you know, poverty is pretty funny. Yeah, and that's funny. I think why this IOTC thing is probably going to, the strike vote's probably going to be pretty overwhelming, and then they'll have to negotiate in a serious way, one hopes.
But I think you're right that it's come to a head because of that very thing, because of the uptick in, I mean, these things have been problems, but the accelerator pad has been pushed down on a lot of them because of the pandemic and the way it's changed the industry.
Yeah.
And it is kind of the ultimate showdown of, you know, for years and years, you know, production companies have been crying, oh, this is new media, we don't really know if it's going to be the norm anymore or not, we don't know how it's going to evolve, but now it's very clear it is the new normal and it's not going anywhere, so it needs to be negotiated as such.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of, but like you said, Todd, the pandemic also has definitely accelerated it. It was accelerating already with the streaming services, but then the pandemic, as people became extra dependent on streaming services.
Well, certainly with acting, you know, the union has always been sort of shut down in negotiations because of this new technology concept. Well, it's new. We're not making any money off of this, and it's gone on forever. And now this has accelerated it, I feel like, 10 more years where it's just become ridiculous. So, of course, there are going to be strikes and problems with labor because it's been bullshit for a long time, but now the bullshit is amplified. Like where, you know, somebody drove home from a James Cameron from, you know, the Titanic shoot and drove into their death because they fell asleep at the wheel or whatever. Now that's happening a lot more because there's a lot more of this production. That's being too speedy, I guess, in an effort to make deadlines for content.
Yep.
Yep, indeed.
Yeah.
All right. I think that about covers it all. That was the pig picture, everyone. I think
I like it. I think that's going to stick around.
That's the pig picture.
No, it's good. I'm sold on it. So
it stars Kevin Bacon, and it was directed by Christopher Guest, and it features Michael McKean.
And let's move on to a little something more lighthearted.
What? No. How can this be more lighthearted?
You guys know what that music means, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's time to play a game.
This is a holdover from the old podcast.
It is. That's right. It's time to play My Movie is Very, Very Important, the game sensation that's sweeping the nation. In My Movie is Very, Very Important, players are given a movie title and a short synopsis and must craft a public statement underscoring how important it is to see their movie in theaters and not on streaming services. These official public statements should be in the spirit of someone like Christopher Nolan on Tenet, who said, "There are parts of life that are far more important than going to the movies. But when you consider what theaters provide, maybe not so many as you might think."
What?
So the rules of My Movie is Very, Very Important are simple. Players can score up to 3 points per movie by including a reference to a recent movie in the same theatrically delayed situation. Slamming an entire genre of other movies is less important than yours, or including a grain of truth buried within a wildly pretentious statement. Players will get 3 movies each. There are no steals. I don't care if there's a tie. Who would like to go first?
Wait, so just to clarify. So
yeah, absolutely. Let's clarify.
When we say something that's important, you know, like the marketing importance, does it have to be like the Nolan one where it's like self-referential, it's important for movies?
Or is it's important. You think of it like this. You're the movie director.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing movies in the theater is sacred to you.
Okay. This is why you have to see it.
It's an abomination to have your movie on streaming services.
It's why you have to see it in the theater. I get it.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So, Falk, you're going first. I'll give you a movie title and a short synopsis to give you some meat to chew on, and then you can go. Your movie title: Being Poor is Cold and Pretty. A brutally honest slice of life depicting the lost and forgotten poor and homeless, shot entirely handheld, got bumped by Fast 9 opening weekend.
For a second I thought you said porn homeless. I was like, that's...
Please wait your turn, Todd.
Sorry.
Vroom vroom. Hi, I'm a car movie. I give you nothing. There have been 9 of them. Do you know who goes sees those movies? Stupid people. Hi. I'm John St. John, director of John Being Cold St. and Poor is Pretty.
John St. John?
Look, I like Vin Diesel. He's like a big talking egg. I like fast things. Fast things are fun, like life. Life's fast. You know what's important? Not movies about cars. Movies about life. My movie's about life. Listen. Yes, I know. I could have shot my film on good cameras. Or having used lighting equipment. Things that would have made the experience of watching it pleasant. Or diverting. Or fun. But art is not about diversion, or laughter, or fun, or comfort. It's about pain. And what is more painful than sitting in the theater, uncomfortable, gum under the seat, mouth breathers choosing to sit next to you, old people eating hard candies, and saying, "What did he just say?" in front of you over and over and over. My movie is not to be seen at home. Nay, if I had power, I would let it not be seen on home. You try to turn it on in your house, your TV would blow up. Televisions are for horrible people and car enthusiasts. My movie is to be seen in a theater. That's the only way. And if you're questioning what I'm saying, oh, John St. John, that's so... Sometimes I just want to have fun. Sometimes I work a hard job. I'm very poor and sad, and I just want to see cars go vroom, vroom. Well, you know what? You're not allowed to see my movie. Fuck you. No, you can't see it. Let's play a role play. Say, one ticket for Cold and Sad is Pretty. One ticket for Cold and Sad is Pretty. No, fuck you. No. No, here's your ticket for Fast 9. You don't get to see my movie. For the rest of you, the smart people, the people who care, the people with intellects, the people with ambition, the people with the understanding that comfort is bad, here's your ticket. Go see my movie.
Wow.
That's the full 3 points. John St. John is a fantastic director. And Vin Diesel is a talking egg. That got a point right there. That was awesome.
Talking Excellent. Egg.
He's like a talking egg. All right, Todd, are you ready for your movie?
Not really.
You're going to get a title, and then you're going to get the synopsis.
Okay. Ready? Yeah.
The title of your movie is Brain Heist.
Brain Heist.
It's a cerebral thriller where a team of high-tech criminals utilize cutting-edge technology to enter the imaginations of their targets, who can only think of pedestrian stuff like snowmobile chases, to steal their bank PIN codes. Most of the running time is devoted to long and confusing explanations of how the technology works.
My name, of course, is Christopher Nolan. And the problem with not going to see my movies in the theaters is simple. Unless you see the visual on a level that includes your peripheral vision, as well as all your other visions, you're not gonna get sucked into the narrative enough to get pulled in to the unraveling of time that I do in all my movies, except Dunkirk. If you don't get visually completely sucked in, you're not, it's, if you watch it on your TV, in other words, I don't know if you saw Tenet, but if you watch it on your TV, you're not going to understand the level of time travel that I'm hassling with. You have to be completely enveloped visually in my time jumps to go along with the time jumps. If you, if part of your vision is you're seeing your own walls or your windows or whatever, you're not going to completely give in to the narrative of jumping through time the way I jump through time. You have to be completely enveloped. The only way to get completely enveloped is to see it in the IMAX with the sound and the all the screens around you.
Okay, I like the invoking IMAX. That's excellent. I like the endless explanation of you explaining how you explain stuff. Is really good. I'm only going to give 2 points though, because these are fictitious movies, so they're not specifically a real director's movies. They're based upon.
That was not stated in the initial rules of the game. Just
I would like
just
to say
a note.
This would be a good name for Christopher Nolan's autobiography. The level of time travel that I'm hassling with. that was pretty great. Which is accurate. That is, it's a hassle to deal with the time travel elements in his movie.
It's such a hassle. I saw somebody posted on YouTube a 25-minute video essay on why Tenet is actually a brilliant movie, and I didn't watch it.
No, why would you?
So, you should have watched it backwards.
Falk, are you ready for your second?
Very ready.
Your second movie. Title: Citizen Kane Remake. It's a shot-for-shot remake, but the twist is this version is entirely in chronological order because you hate flashbacks. It's okay. He's percolating.
We got to give him a minute.
Yeah.
That's a hard one, man. It's...
Hi. I'm Nick Frenson. Director of Rosebud? Question mark. You may think that there is no value in what I do. And that is fair. I think what I do is I plumb psychological depths that have already been plumbed before. Mm-hmm. What I do is address images that have already been created before.
Mm-hmm.
I readdress them. Because what is life but not experiencing the same thing again from a different perspective? Now, you've all seen the movie Citizen Kane. I would say 90% of you that listen to me, you've seen it at home, on your television. I'm offering you an opportunity to see that movie on the big screen. But my version, which has been done before. But you see, now you're going to experience it again, but elsewhere. Bigger. Better? Maybe. Who's to say? Now, life unfolds how? Let's see. Does life unfold in a series of confusing flashbacks where we jump from age to age? We're an old man, we're a baby, we're a middle-aged man, we're an old man, we're a baby. No. It does not, unless you're insane. It evolves chronologically. That's right. And that is the only way you can experience seeing the same thing again, but done again. Not for a reason, per se, but because it's another time it's been done. One more. Not better, not different, not additive. just again.
I'm going to give three
points.
So go
see Rosebud.
For just again.
I was really trying to channel why what's-his-name made Psycho again. I couldn't come up with anything. He just did it again.
We're just doing it again. Okay, Todd.
Yeah.
Your second movie.
Great.
Give you the title and the synopsis. I think you're going to like this one. It's called Starman 2020.
Mm.
Jeff Bridges returns to Earth in the giant pinball to save the planet from climate change, but his trusting nature finds him and his advanced technology being used by Bitcoin farmers.
Wait, what? Say that again?
Starman 2020.
Uh-huh.
Jeff Bridges returns to Earth in the giant pinball to save the planet from climate change, but his trusting nature finds him and his advanced technology being used by Bitcoin farmers.
Okay.
Why do we have to see this in the theater? Why is it so important?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's super important to see Starman 2020.
2020. It's being released in 2021.
Right. In the theaters. You know me. My name's Frank Plummer, the auteur, a director who does all my own scripts in directing, editing, and scoring. I use, of course, my Casio from the 1980s, still to this day, to keep the brand on track. And I don't think there are that many auteur directors outside of me, Frank Plummer. And there's, of course, John Carpenter as well. And Paul Electrician is another great auteur director that I think the Marvel Universe has sort of left behind. But now, in this new age of COVID, where everything's uncertain, we have a chance to take back the multiplexes and bring you auteur director magic like John Carpenter's They Live and my own They Die. And, and of course, Paul Electrician's They Continue. They're all great films, all auteur films. If you do not support auteur films in the theaters, you are asking for corporations to take over your entertainment and spoon-feed it to you and not challenge you and not make you excited and not make you think about important issues like homelessness and where our food comes from. Is it people? Is it bugs? Come see my movie.
Is it people? Is it bugs? Gets a point. I like the slam on corporate and Marvel.
It was actually it was a pretty cogent argument.
Yeah, good argument. I also like the choice of the name Frank Plummer, which sounds like a made up pseudonym. That you were like reading off like an ad on a passing bus for a plumber when you're trying to make up a name.
And he was mad about Dan Electrician.
So wait a minute. So 2-1-2. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Full three.
Yay. Worked out.
Stephen Falk, your final movie.
Oh, there's another one?
Yes. We got
this
three.
This is your last one.
Sure,
your last one. Title: Monster, Not Monster. A psychological thriller where a man keeps witnessing someone identical to him commit crimes no one else sees. There are many long scenes of him just walking around the city at night. Way too many scenes of him just wandering around at night. Like, your editor kept asking you if you wanted to, you know, maybe cut a couple. Why do we need to see this in theaters?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rink Garbanzo. director of Angel No Angel. And wife, not wife.
It's
this
a trilogy.
Cap to my trilogy. Rick Garbanzo's Monster Not Monster. They got my name on it this time. I've talked to you about this before. You didn't listen. So I'm going to try again. Some of the criticisms of my first two movies, they hurt. I'm not going to lie. You know, they said my first film was meandering, pointless, hard to see. It didn't feel good. But I took it as a challenge. I took it as a challenge to go deeper into those aspects that make you uncomfortable. And then when you called wife, not wife, impossible to see a single image. Meandering, dull, same criticisms. That hurt a lot. Because that was a comedy. So look, I made Monster Not Monster. I'm going to be honest with you. It's really hard to see. Like, I edited it. I don't know what's on there. There's some dialogue. That's for sure. A lot of footsteps. 9 days in the Foley studio for all the footsteps of the wandering. I'm just gonna put it out there, you guys. If you don't see this movie in the theater, I'm going to kill myself.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
My mom is 81. I have four children. Nora, Epsilon, Sally, and Durkins.
Epsilon.
Do you want them to grow up without a father? Because if you don't go to the theater to see Monster Not Monster, I'm going to kill myself. I don't care if you actually see it. Buy a ticket and go see something else. Go see something that you can see.
Durkins.
That has pace or story. But you don't want Durkins to grow up an orphan. You don't want my wife to... She's going to fuck Bob down the street. I don't want that to happen. But you know what? I more don't want to be dead because you didn't see Monster Not Monster in the theater. I will send you money. I will send you $9 or $15. I just write to me. Write to me, care of WPA agency. And I will send you money. Just go buy a ticket. Fucking don't kill me.
Hashtag Durkins needs a dad.
Poor Durkins and Epsilon.
Shit, fucking Durkins. I love that kid.
I like how it went from like being upset at the criticism and to full on suicidal desperation. I'm gonna give the full three to that one. That got scary. Todd, you ready for your last one?
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to top a suicide.
Boy, yeah, that's you have to really pull out all the stops on this one, Todd.
All right.
Your movie's called Death Row Your Boat. It's an intense drama where a gentle crab fisherman was convicted of a crime he didn't commit and has spent the last 10 years awaiting execution. His only salvation lies in the hands of a young law student, the man's daughter, who will stop at nothing to find the truth. So much color correction leaning blue in this one. Like it's James Cameron blue.
Hey, everybody. I'm just a regular guy like you. I just happen to direct movies. You could direct movies too. I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing about the medium, the art form, is that, you know, ultimately with several million dollars, we could all do it. We can all do it. And I've done it here. My name, of course, is John Franzen.
That was my name.
No relation.
No.
Different from John Franzen?
Different John Franzen. I'm sorry. I thought you were Tom Spence. I didn't. Anyway, I'm John Franzen. Not the other director, John Franzen. I'm the director whose feet are firmly planted in faith. And that's what this movie is. This movie is about illuminating the truth about our Lord.
Oh, no, it's a faith-based movie. Oh, shit.
And not just our Lord, but his son who came to Earth and sacrificed himself for all of us.
Starman?
No, his name was Jesus Christ. And in addition to our Lord and Jesus Christ, who came down in human form and saved us, was crucified and rose full-bodied into heaven, there's also the Holy Ghost, a.k.a. the Holy Spirit, very important, not to be trifled with, and an important thing to remember always. It was those three things, the Lord, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And I think for those three entities... entities referenced by Don McLean in his great rock and roll song, American Pie. It's for these three guys that you need to get out to the theaters and risk your lives to see my movie. This is it, you guys. This is your chance to get up on that crucifix, to sacrifice yourselves for humanity and for my movie. Thank you. I've been John Franzen, not the other John.
All right, I'm gonna give that. I'm gonna give that a point for brazenly using the exact same name as the other director and causing mass confusion. I'm gonna give a point for the unexpected like left turn into faith-based.
What was the movie called?
Death Row Your Boat. and I'm gonna give a third point for the implication that people should risk getting COVID to go see your movie, your religious faith based movie. That is a deeply, deeply cynical turn that fits in perfectly with those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
However, I'm afraid Falk does just squeak by with 9 points to 8.
Right.
It's right. a Falk win, and congratulations.
Well, he was really good at both matching. John Franzens. He matched up a meandering explanation why he wanted to see a movie for a meandering movie. I mean, I think that's that. I couldn't overcome that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. He was very strong there. So well done, everybody. Excellent game, and that's fun the game. Show, guys.
That was fun.
Yeah. So that was kind of a test run, a backdoor pilot, if you please, for the version of the show we're calling The Pig Picture. That's what we settled on. Is that what we workshopped? The Pig
Picture.
Well,
that's the name of the. That's the name of the segment. It's still the Film Pigs podcast.
Yeah, it's still Film Pigs podcast.
Well, no, that's no, but like, you know, like we call the bacon. It's like the subtitle.
Oh, yeah.
Subtitle.
Okay. Sure. Sure. It's
Film
the lazier
podcast,
version.
The Pig Picture.
Yeah. Okay, I'm fine with that.
Look, these are just suggestions, you guys.
This is not a professional way to end a show.
It wasn't a professional way to start it or conduct it.
But you're just arguing with your fellow cast members.
Yeah, well, no, but conflict is good. It creates drama. Thank you to Adam Blau for all the music. We don't want to forget Adam. Or do we want to start a beef with him, too?
Yeah,
no.
Fuck Adam Blau.
All right, fuck
I'm
Adam
so
Blau.
I'm so sick of his attitude.
He sucks.
In the ass this and whole time.
If any of you fucking listeners steal Auntie here, I'm going to fucking kill you. I have data to prove that you listened to this episode.
That's
I will murder your entire family. It's mine.